Jeffrey Miller is the President and CEO of the Alliance for Biking and Walking, the North American coalition of more than 200 grassroots advocacy organizations. He serves on the boards of America Bikes, America Walks, and Adventure Cycling Association. Before joining the Alliance in 2008, he grew the Bicycle Coalition of Maine into one of the strongest statewide bicycle coalitions. He enjoys speaking across the continent and working with local advocates to grow this people-powered movement.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for coming today. And as Tim mentioned, the Alliance is a coalition of state and local organizations. So Boston here, how many folks here are from Boston or within, say, 50 miles, just out of curiosity, okay? How many of you are public workers, agencies, staff, all right? How many are local elected officials? Ooh. How many are advocates or work in NGOs? All right, and how many would you classify yourself as? I didn't give you a good category. All right, sorry about that. just real quick, tell us where you're from or of interest here, if you'd like. Okay, category I missed is what I'm... Higher ed, thank you. How many higher ed? Okay, great. So the Alliance is a coalition that exists to serve state and local advocacy organizations. We are North American. The vast majority of our membership and the work I'm going to be talking about is U.S. focused, but we do have about 220 organizations across the continent. And our mission, very simply, is to help create state and local organizations, to strengthen them and unite them, all with the goal of helping them be more effective to make their communities better and safer places to bike and walk. So another quick question for all of you. Has anyone heard a really good disclosure yet at this whole conference? I mean, Tim, I'm with you, but it's like, nothing to disclose here. I'm looking for a really good pharma company who's doing an evil plot or something somewhere. I want to just sort of highlight real quickly about the benchmarking project. This is something that the Alliance began actually back in 2005. And it really has sort of a major goal of helping root through the tons of data that exists out there to really pull out some of the key trends and to equip advocates, whether they're inside advocates working in institutions of higher education or in agencies, or outside advocates like NGOs and so forth, to be able to make their communities a better place to bike and walk. We very much believe that there are some really good models out there where communities, where advocates, elected officials, agency staff are working well together, and that's where we're seeing a lot of good progress. And so we work to sort of shine the light on those best practices, to share that information, to help network those people, and to really help educate and train others where they can be making those gains. And one of the key things that advocates always need is data that's relevant to them. And really a lot of what the benchmarking report attempts to do is to distill a lot of the good data into a very user-friendly format that's helpful for the public as a whole, but especially for elected officials and others. So we actually did a pilot project in 2005 with 15 cities and states, and then in 2007 published the first full benchmarking report with support from the Centers for Disease Control. And we have been basically on a biennial cycle ever since. So the 2010 report and 2012 reports came out in January of both 2010 and 2012. And we are working to bring around the 2014 report very soon. So we are funded primarily by the CDC to do a lot of the research. We have a couple other sponsors like AARP, Planet Bike, and others who also help with other costs associated with promoting and marketing and sharing a lot of this research. But we have an amazing team of partners that range from Federal Highway and ITE, the League of American Bicyclists, who are very close partners of ours, and the Advocacy Advanced Partnership is of the League and the Alliance, working together to educate agency staff, elected officials, and advocates about all the different sources of funding to be spent on biking and walking. But others like our academic partners at Rutgers and Virginia Tech, and so they really serve as a key review team to make certain that we're staying statistically accurate. And the other huger set of folks I could never quite fit on here because it literally is hundreds of agencies and organizations are the bike ped coordinators, are the Safe Routes to School coordinators, are both at the city and the state level, as well as a lot of our member advocacy organizations. I'll talk about them a little bit more here pretty soon. So really the goal here is to share what these trends are. And to get this key data, and particularly to help get information on the outcomes out to everyone. So we are looking to release the 2014 benchmarking report probably around late February of 2014. The benchmarking report has always looked at all 50 states and the 50 largest cities. We're now at 52 cities because we've had a couple of cities, such as New Orleans, have enough population change that they fell out of the top 50 cities, but we've wanted to keep that benchmarking going, and so we've continued to track them. New for the 2014 report, we have added 17 mid and smaller size cities. And I think this is actually one of the successes in showing how helpful the report has been to communities to be able to benchmark themselves to their sister and brother cities. Is that we have these smaller cities that drop out of the top 50, literally begging us, like, can you include us? And so this year, we actually were able to do that. And so we're going to be including for the first time cities like Pittsburgh and St. Louis, who have been doing some really good stuff, but have never had that chance to be compared. So you can see all those green dots. Those are all going to be new cities profiled in the next benchmarking report. So we collect a ton of data. We actually use 21 different sources of public data that's out there. This ranges everything from the community, the American Community Survey, census data, FARS, and other sorts of related data to safety and so forth. And we try to compile it all into this massive resource where the 2012 report is at 242 pages, and we have whole chapters on safety, on policies, on infrastructure, and so forth. So it really does try to compile a lot. We collect some of our own endemic data, and this is the one where it really does engage a lot of the city and state agency staff and our member organizations, where we send out three different surveys, state-specific surveys, city-specific surveys, and then we have these new mid-sized city surveys that were a little more condensed. And these are not minor surveys. They take many, many hours to fill out, and frankly, we give folks a couple of months to compile the data because there's a lot of partners that they usually have to coordinate with. One of the other key successes is how we fact-check this with advocates and agency staff both having a chance to review what the other is inputting. And then again, with our review team, looking at that compiled data. So when we see an outlier in the data, we have a chance to go back and fact-check that and so forth. So a little sample. And I'll also highlight new that we did for the 2014 report. We've been doing the state data collection since 2005. About 2008 or 9 is when the League of American Bicyclists started doing their bike-friendly states ranking. And so they were asking a lot of similar questions, using data in very different ways. And what's really different about what we do and what the League does is they basically put out one number. You know, they have all these factors that they mush together. They have their own formula, and they say, okay, here is the most bike-friendly state, and here is the least bike-friendly state, and everything in between. As where we give rankings for states based on, who's the safest state, who's spending the most money, and we actually literally break it out. So it's a more straightforward, if you will. But sending two surveys that were asking a lot of overlapping questions was something we were hearing from all our members and agency staff that was a little burdensome. So we worked with them and did one combined survey this year, which we've gotten a lot of thanks for them. You'll notice a very faint watermark draft there. These are actually images from the report that is still 4 months away from being published. So I will just note that some of these may tweak and get tweaked and changed a little bit as we go through our reviews with the academic team. But we have a lot of good data that we do share, trying to show, you know, amongst, as this one does, looking at the mode share based on race and ethnicity. We do similar data on other key demographics, income levels, and so forth. And so we get to see whether there are any major variables. As we can see here, commuters who walk to work, we're seeing a few less white non-Hispanic walkers to work, but there, you know, there's not huge variances in these percentages. So it is one of those things where we're able to see that, yes, this is fairly representative of the population as a whole. The comparison of progress is also something. This is a we chopped this chart pretty dramatically to fit on a slide, and so you can see basically about the top 20 cities here with existing bike infrastructure and a few of the bottom ones. So whether we're looking at bike lanes, bike paths, or just simply signed routes and so forth, you know, we can compare a lot of that sort of infrastructure that does exist out there. And one of the things we really are seeing in the report is the dramatic increase in infrastructure, in policies, in education programs, and events. And I'll talk about a couple of those a little bit more in a second. We also do a lot of comparison of key data here. This is a sample of the chart for number or the percentage of commuters by foot. And these charts show the dark pink is highlighting the high, the light pink the low. So we have right there next to each other Alaska with the highest level of walk commuters and Alabama with the smallest percentage of walk commuters. And you can see we also have some of that broken out via income data as well. We also use a lot of this to then, as I mentioned earlier, do ranking by state on these very specific data. So we can see here, you know, like the third column looking at biked fatality rates, where we can see that Vermont scores as the safest state in the country, and a couple other interesting North America or New England states very close. And of course, we typically are finding some correlation of parts and regions of the country that are not quite as safe. One of the real key things here is that now that we are going into our fourth full benchmarking report of all 50 states and the 50 largest cities, is sort of the trends that we're starting to see. And in fact, in the 2012 report, one of my favorite pages was in the executive summary where we were able to have a chart showing some of the key indicators where we highlighted like 33 different policies and metrics and so forth, just to see between the three different benchmarking reports what the trend was. On every single one of these, we were seeing improvements. So this is something that we're very encouraged to be seeing. So here we see the numbers of people biking and walking to work. One of the things I want to highlight is that a lot of the numbers we have are based on commute trips. And I want to just call out that is obviously a much smaller percentage of all trips that are taken by biking and walking. And one of the biggest challenges that we have in trying to compile all 50 states and the 50 largest cities is that a lot of the ACS data, for instance, which does look just specifically at the walk to work or bike to work trips, that's the only ones we're able to find sort of consistently across. And so we are a little hamstrung by that challenge. We're also able to identify some of the trends specifically where we're seeing a lot of improvement, and one of which is very exciting is the number of open streets events. And a quick commercial on the side for the Open Streets Project. If any of you aren't familiar, open streets are ciclovias, Sunday parkways, Saturday streets, where a major corridor will be closed down to automobile traffic for a day. It's only a one-day intervention, but we find them to be transformational in that people start to make connections between their home and a park or a downtown and realize, well, it's only a 10-minute ride to this business district. And no, I'm not going to ride that on any other day because of the traffic that may exist on that road. But hopefully starts them thinking about not just whether they're going to ride a week later, but how to start transforming that that corridor into a safer place to bike and walk. And what's also very important is when these sorts of events are repeated. We never talk about Open Streets as a singular event. We talk about it as initiatives where they should be the first Sunday of every month, for instance, but repeated many times. So again, we're able to highlight a bunch of good initiatives that are happening. And one of the exciting things is the other types of counts and metric and data that are being collected. We have a little tussle once in a while in a city that says, well, we're not that bad. We've got other data that shows. And again, it's that challenge we have of finding comparable data from city to city and state to state. We do highlight a couple of the key factors. Such as the fact that overall we've got 11.5% of all trips taken by bike and walk. We're nearly 15% of the fatalities, and of course we're seeing a very small percentage of the transportation funding. Just a couple last little things here. The impact factors, particularly in relations to health. Here we have the brown line, again using commuting data, but showing by comparison to all 50 states there across the bottom, levels of bike trips to work, biking and walking trips to work combined, compared to levels of high blood pressure. And we have very similar charts showing that inverse correlation with diabetes and obesity. I sort of refer to these as the duh charts. You know, a more active population has the lower health problems here, and that direct correlation as well with meeting basic levels of physical activity. So having that base data to show that this isn't just a mere coincidence or recreational activity, but overall something that does make a difference there. Also on the safety factor, that the more bicycling and walking that there is, the safer it is in those communities. That's sort of a safety in numbers piece even that we get out of it. So looking at some of the key findings, you know, we are seeing increases in biking and walking, but it is very, very slow and small. We had big decreases in the 90s and 2000. Walking has since gone up to about 3% of all walk-to-work trips. Biking is just about 0.56 of all bike-to-work trips. But we also see that women are only making about 24% of bike commuters. And of course, we all know how bad the stats are on the population health overall. But we are seeing a lot of good progress. As I mentioned earlier, all the trends on policies and so forth are moving up. We know that we're now well over 500 communities, for instance, who have complete streets policies. And obviously it takes some time to get a lot of these sorts of things implemented and to see that impact that it makes. But getting that infrastructure built is certainly one of the key things we're trying to highlight, and the other opportunities to encourage and get people bicycling and walking. Oops, sorry, I'm going the wrong way here. So I already talked about the safety. I'm also just going to quickly highlight that the benchmarking report has inspired a bunch of other benchmarking data collection initiatives, which we're very excited about. The Texas Bicycle Coalition, or Bike Texas, has done now their own full-on benchmarking report where they've highlighted 40 different cities around the state of Texas. So again, keep an eye out for the benchmarking report coming out in late February of 2014. You can download the 2012 report. I have a hard copy here for anyone who might want to see or wrestle it from me. I also have postcards on the back table in the corner. But if you go to peoplepoweredmovement.org/benchmarking, you can download the report there. You can also download our Open Streets Guide for free off the website as well. So with that, I'll happily take any questions in whatever few seconds exist.
One question. Hopefully it's not a wrestle. You can do that after.
Yes. Yes, thank you for asking. That's great. I did not put that in here. So we do, as part of the benchmarking report, We try to pull out and highlight some of those really good case studies of things that are happening. Andrea Milne, who's the author of the 2014 benchmarking report, is doing a lot of extra work around particularly highlighting that challenge of the huge spread between men and women on biking and highlighting some of the good projects that are happening. So we do highlight cities and states in particular who are doing really good jobs on this and that. We also started in the 2012 report across the borders piece where we highlight different examples from other countries who are doing cool initiatives or have seen remarkable progress. So a lot of good examples there we like to highlight from others. I'll happily be around afterwards to answer any other questions too. So thank you.